All righty then, let's do a show. Sports360AZ.com. It is a good Wednesday. On the show today, Pedro Gomez is going to be with us. We'll talk baseball with Pedro. Matt Williams, I think, is going to get fired. We know Matt well here in Arizona. The chokeout by Jonathan Papelbon. Pedro's in San Francisco, Eric tells me, and was there last night to watch the Dodgers clinch on the Giants' home field, which for any Giants fan is just death. It's just murder. If the Dodgers clinch in San Diego, nobody cares. But because they clinch up there, well, that's a whole different deal. And we'll also talk about the Diamondbacks. I think this is going to be our last Pedro because we've got the TV show and so much stuff. This will be our last Pedro for the baseball season. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, what do you think? You're getting settled over there, Eric. Should we keep I kind of want to keep Pedro going. It's just we've got too much stuff happening.
Maybe we just take a few weeks off and then he comes back for the World Series.
Yeah? Is that what you want?
Well, I don't know.
You're the producer. I'm just wondering. You're the person in charge of this ship.
No, not really.
You don't think?
I report to you.
Get out of here. Shut up.
It says CEO on your Twitter profile. There's no one above the CEO.
Do you want me to? Well, I see CEOs forced out all the time.
CEO Trump's
I'm Seth
executive
Blatter.
Producer.
Sepp Blatter. That's me.
Well, let's
FIFA.
Hope not. That's going to be bad for the entire company if that's the case.
Michael Fabiano is with us today. My fantasy team blows. We scored 115 points and we lost. So, and you guys don't care about my fantasy team, but I care about yours because I'm a loving, caring guy. So we'll have Michael on with us. If you missed any of Peter King and Calais yesterday, they're up on the website and they will also be on the TV show tonight, which is on Fox Sports Arizona. We're on at 5:30 tonight, 5:30 because of the Diamondbacks game, 5:30, 10 o'clock, and 1 a.m. Set your DVRs for 1 a.m. You'll always get the show. I'm really looking forward to the Cardinals game this week, and I saw where Tyrann Mathieu was named the NFC Defensive Player of the Week right off the top today. And I mentioned this to Jody Jackson the other day. When I talk about the Cardinals, and there's fans that say, do you think they can go all the way? Well, if I say no, then the conversation will end. And many times I would like to just say no because please leave me alone. When I'm watching my son play in his 10-year-old basketball league and somebody comes over and sits down and say, how do you think the Cardinals are going to do? Well, I think they're going to be awful. Thank you very much. I'm here to watch basketball. Don't ask. Leave me alone. Go away. But I'm not that guy. I like their stories. I don't root for teams. I never have rooted for teams. Even the team here in town, if they do well, fine. If they don't do well, fine. I root for people. I root for stories. And the Tyrann Mathieu story, if I were to go through, like I've got Michael Beasley on my show sheet today. Those of you that have watched through the years know that I have so low regard for the late Howard Cosell wrote a book called What's Wrong with Sports. And he wrote it in the early 80s. And it's a very good read. Because as much as we love sports, there are parts of it that we look at and say, this is what is wrong with sports. What is right about sports is Tyrann Mathieu. Here's somebody that overcame some personal demons, troubles, has come in, was given a chance, plays well, gives back to the community, does well for himself, and has his life turned around. What is wrong with sports is a guy like Michael Beasley, who's collecting, I don't know how many paychecks he's collecting now. His agent must just love him. Please keep getting in trouble. Please have enablers all around you. The Miami Heat are the latest team to give up on him, and the Suns are still paying him, I believe. The Suns. That is what is wrong with sports when guys like that, even though he's going to China, he's still getting a paycheck. There should be leagues across the planet that say he's never going to play again. So I'm very happy about Tyrann Mathieu. I can tie Tyrann Mathieu and Michael Beasley together like that. What are we to make out of metrics in football? So I go to some sites that I think that are really interesting. I'm not one of these guys that is Moneyball inside and out. I think that there is a human element to what goes on the field. And you just cannot be 100% analytics. I've heard of people that are hired by organizations now in all of sports that are big analytics guys that never once go into locker rooms. Well, if you never go into a locker room and see the camaraderie or the culture or lack thereof on either front, maybe you're not getting a you're not getting a true read on players. But I can tell you this, that Pro Football Focus put out yesterday that on passes thrown in between the numbers at 11 to 20 yards downfield, Cardinals quarterback Carson Palmer is 17 for 17. Perfect. 267, two touchdowns. I get it. It's against, and this is what I've gotten over the last few days. You keep talking about Carson Palmer, but you don't, you're not emphasizing enough. It's against the Saints, and it's against the Bears, and it's against the 49ers. No, I'm not.
But here's the thing, Brad. One thing we've learned from the last 3 weeks of watching the NFL, there's a lot of bad teams this year.
Oh, my gosh.
There are more bad teams than good teams. And there are far more really bad teams than really good teams. That's just sort of the way it is.
Or there's teams that are flawed. I'll give you an example. St. Louis comes in here this week, and Peter alluded to this yesterday, and he's dead flat right. For all the high picks that they've had, and they've had a ton of them, their offense still is pretty anemic.
So bad.
Their wide receivers, when you're relying on Kenny Britt, a guy that, again, was not a model citizen or even close to it in Tennessee, and you're hoping that he comes around.
Yeah, they're hoping for Tavon Austin, who they drafted relatively high.
Hoping. Yeah, and so Todd Gurley's a nice running back, but he's not at 100%. Nick Foles has done some good things, but not great things. You go the week after that, Detroit. So the players across the line from Detroit are saying, we know what you're running before you even snap the ball. That's out there. Then you have Pittsburgh. They just lost Ben Roethlisberger. Then you have Baltimore. You know, Baltimore is...
Beatable. Lost at home to Cincinnati. So, a team that usually does not play very well in Baltimore.
But so you go down the list of teams. If you were to look at Green Bay top to bottom, even after losing Jordy Nelson, they're really good. Green Bay's defense, I think, is really good. I just don't think the Cardinals yet have faced what I consider to be a high-octane, high-powered offense. Drew Brees without Jimmy Graham is not Drew Brees. Okay, so until this defense faces what I consider a great offense, and they're not going to face him again this week. I mean, if this game is 16-13, the Rams win. If this game is over 24, even 21 probably, the Cardinals win. You're right, though, Eric. There just aren't that many great teams. I'm going to talk about Larry Brown a little bit later on in the show because I've known Larry when he was at UCLA. Larry Brown was back in the news yesterday for, once again, cheating and lying to NCAA investigators. And Larry Brown was in trouble at Kansas, and Larry Brown was in trouble at UCLA, and Larry Brown was in trouble at SMU. And every time, it's not my fault, it's somebody else's fault. Now, Larry Brown can coach. I'm not saying that, but when you have Larry Brown on your campus and he was suspended for 9 games, I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on in the program. The baseball playoffs last night, I'm actually watching. I watched the Dodgers and Giants. I watched Kershaw just blow right through the Giants last night. And today's a big day for the Twins. They have a doubleheader against the Indians. They're trying to get that second wildcard spot. The second wildcard spot's been good. On the college front, so Rich Rod loses Scooby Wright for an extended period. They don't know yet about Anu Solomon. There's a couple of notes around the team that I find interesting. The ratings for the U of A-UCLA game were awful. And Rich Rod actually asked his team if they wanted to practice at 4 o'clock today when it's 100 degrees or 6:30 this morning when it's 70. And the team decided to give him an answer that they should give him, and that's we'll just wake up early and get it out of the way today. I'm not going to say much about ASU because I crushed them on Monday. I crushed them on Tuesday. There's really nothing to say. You know, Todd Graham should actually just stand in front of the podium and say, guys, I got nothing to say today. Either we show up and win Saturday or just have at it. That's it.
I just want to see improvement. I mean, I don't expect...
They haven't been good in any game.
I don't expect them to win, but if they go to UCLA and play well and lose to a team that's better than they are, which UCLA is, that to me is progress. If it's 41-10, the problems are just going to keep snowballing.
Well, if it's 41-10, have they tuned him out?
Yeah.
Right?
Which could be. It could be.
Because when you were in Texas A&M and you were on the sideline for the SC game the other night, and fortunately, you weren't at Cal Poly or New Mexico. Or were you?
No, I was not.
Thank God.
But I watched the Cal Poly game.
Why?
I didn't see any of the New Mexico game.
Just go on a date. Do anything but that.
I don't have the Pac-12 network like most of America.
Go to a sports bar. So. Did you see improvement from the Texas A&M game to the USC game, or did you see a program that unraveled?
No, they unraveled. Yeah. I mean, defensively, that's the missed tackles and the blown assignments and Jordan Simone taking bad angles on tackles, and the offense struggled, but for me, the defense was an even bigger concern.
See, and that's Todd Graham's deal. You know, that Todd coaches the defense. I had a couple people send me notes. You've always had great affection for him. You go MC the thing in Pine Top. You know, you guys have gone fishing at Danny White's place. Yeah, all that's fair. But when a team doesn't play well and you're the one, it's like me. If I do this and I just screw up over and over and over and I see somebody and they decide to call me out on it, they have every right to. I'm thick skinned on that in that regard. I can handle it. And I think Todd's in a space where there's never been more adversity around the Arizona State football program than there is right now. The Bo Graham thing has not gone away. They want it to go away. It's not set well over on campus, from my understanding. And that's as far as I'm going to go with it. I don't need to go any further, but it's not good. Pedro Gomez joins us next. Always good, popular segment with Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, insider. He is in the Bay Area today. He joins us next. I'm Brad Sussmat. And now we go to San Francisco. Pedro Gomez joins us every week, ESPN baseball analyst, insider. He is at the airport in the Bay Area. Why? I don't know. Flight should be canceled. The fog is in, guys. Sorry, I got to stay here. It's San Francisco. However, you were on the field last night watching the Dodgers celebrate. Is that one of the... It's one thing if the Yankees celebrate at Fenway. It's about the same if the Dodgers celebrate in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, although the you know what, the respect level that has come from the Giants winning three of the last five World Series, you could definitely sense it's not like the old days before the Giants had won a World Series. The Dodgers were very, very congratulatory toward the Giants and being such great competitors and rivals for them and pushing them. That was really the theme when they talked about the Giants. It's not nearly as vitriolic as it used to be, say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when there was a lot of real hatred is a strong word.
But there was hatred.
Are you there?
Yeah.
No, there was hatred.
Yeah.
But hatred is really strong. It may not have quite risen to that level or lowered to that depth, however you want to think about it, but it's not quite the same. There's definitely a respect level now.
Has Mattingly grown into his role as manager? Because here was a guy, I think you and I talked a year ago or so, that he was going to get blown out.
Yeah.
What do you see out of Mattingly now?
I think it's a better clubhouse, which in turn makes it an easier job for him. You know, when the clubhouse is kind of sideways all the time, it makes it tougher on a manager because you've got issues always going on. And the level of professionalism, which is one of the things he told me last night, has definitely improved. And that makes his job easier. That's not to say he's on safe ground because, let's face it, if they lose in the first round with a $300 million payroll or nearly $300, he very well could be shown the door.
Really? All right. Well, and what you're speaking to without speaking to it is Yasiel Puig. We haven't heard his name much this year. Like, he was a wrecking ball last year, right?
There's Yasiel Puig. He's actually in Glendale, like Glendale Ranch.
Right.
Camelback Ranch, I should say, working out. But whether he'll be available for the postseason really is highly questionable. But, you know, you've also taken out other people. The old shortstop is gone. The old outfielder who's now in San Diego, there's
Matt Kemp.
They feel like, and Hanley Ramirez, and they believe, in talking to them privately, that these have been additions through subtraction.
I get it. But there are a lot of people that believe, Pedro, and I trust your opinion, that the Mets can take the Dodgers, that the Cardinals can take the Dodgers, and that it wouldn't even be a fair fight in some cases. What do you see?
Well, you talk to people who know a lot more, you know, whether they be advanced scouts or front office people, and one of the things they say that is the Dodgers' Achilles heel, they didn't show it last night, and it's not to say it's 100%, but when they face good pitching, they're in trouble. And when they face great pitching, they are really in trouble. And when you look at the fact that the Mets will probably line up Syndergaard, Harvey, you know, Mats, there's definitely a DeGrom also, I should say. DeGrom probably will be game one. But, you know, there's that's strong pitching.
Yeah.
And the only question mark is the Mets are in the postseason for the first time collectively. How will they react? But, boy, pitching can always neutralize. And we saw it last year with Kansas City with that bullpen, how they neutralized, even though they had very little or none to no postseason experience for the most part. That didn't matter to them.
Pedro Gomez at the airport in San Francisco. Last night he was there for the Dodgers clinching of the Giants, talking baseball every week, ESPN, and Valley resident Pedro Gomez. Matt Williams, Jonathan Papelbon, Bryce Harper. So let's go through what happened with Harper, and when you saw the video of Harper getting choked out by Papelbon and that whole play, what went through your mind?
That Papelbon had gone off the rails. That's what immediately went through my mind. And in, you know, with time to really consume it and to talk to people, he was definitely in the wrong. It's not, look, if a player is not hustling, it's okay for someone to tell him something. The problem is, it's not okay for a pitcher, and one that's been there for 5 or 6 weeks, 7 weeks, whatever it is, to be that guy. And that really is the issue, and that's why Papelbon cannot win this, especially when you're talking about the face of the franchise. And hey, let's not forget, okay, maybe Bryce Harper didn't bust it down the line on a lazy fly to left field. How many times have we seen Bryce Harper really bust his ass around the bases? And he is not somebody who you can say is a lazy ball player. So I think it stemmed from a few days earlier when Harper had said, hey, probably I'm the one that's going to get hit next,
right,
after Papelbon's Brett Machado of the Orioles.
Right.
So I there was probably more brewing there. But I did, Brad, have somebody tell me that, because, you know, people look at Papelbon and say, well, he's a two-time World Series champion. Yes, that was in Boston. And I was told one of the reasons it worked in Boston is because he came up playing A-ball, double-A, triple-A with guys like Pedroia and Lester. Then he gets to the big league level, and you've got a really strong manager in Terry Francona and a really strong pitching coach at the time in John Farrell, who could basically just pull him aside whenever he started to act up a little bit, and whether it be Pedroia, Lester, Farrell, or Francona, and tell him basically, shut the hell up. Just do your job. But because he had grown up in that organization, you can do that. He has no history in Washington. He's only been there 2 months. He had no real history in Philadelphia when he got there as a free agent. So it's not a good situation.
Okay, how does this speak to Matt Williams putting him back out there and not being aware and having to call a Washington Post reporter late that night? I mean, to me, it doesn't speak well to Matt Williams at all.
No, it does not. And let's face it, these dugouts are about 80 feet long. So if you know, that wasn't a minor little dust-up.
No.
That was a full-on chokehold ruckus. You know guys were yelling.
Of an MVP,
exactly,
too.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
All you have to do is turn your head a half a turn. And, you know, if somehow he was in the bathroom at the time, if something else had occurred, maybe. But then you've got to rely on your coaches to tell you, hey, this just happened.
Sure.
So regardless, whether he really, truly didn't see it, that speaks volumes. And whether he may not have been in the dugout and truly didn't see it, it speaks volumes that his coaches didn't say, this just happened.
He's gone, right? He's got to be gone. They collapse.
I mean, you talk to people in baseball. Yeah, you talk to people in baseball, and they just don't see a way that he can return. Now, obviously, his relationship with Mike Rizzo, the GM, dates
right
back 20 years to their days with the Diamondbacks together. It's going to be tough because this was Rizzo's handpicked manager.
Yep.
This is the one he said, this is the guy. So if this doesn't work out, that's a black mark against Rizzo as well, because he failed. And let's not forget, the Nationals' window is not as wide open as it was a year ago or 2 years ago. They're going to lose Jordan Zimmermann this winter. They're going to lose Ian Desmond this winter. It's not quite the same, and I don't know that they can bring Papelbon back. So there's a lot of repairing that has to be done and a lot of roster manipulation or tinkering that has to be done, and it doesn't speak well for Rizzo as well.
No. You and I have talked every week about the Diamondbacks, and every week we talk about how they need to add pitching here in the offseason, and they're now coming into their final games of the year, and they're going to finish below the 84 Big Brad Cessmatt prediction, and I've gotten hammered for it.
Very close to it.
Which is fine.
Very close.
Which is fine. It's half the fun. But what's your takeaway from this? Mine is that they have turned the corner. Now, they have not gone all the way around the corner, but there's clearly some credibility that has been restored, from my view, towards the organization, and that 16 should be a year where they are pushing and nipping at the heels.
Well, it's not just your view or my view. I actually talked to Bruce Bochy last night, who's probably the best manager in all of baseball, and I said, what do you think of the job that the Diamondbacks have done? And he immediately said, Chip's got them playing, and they're playing hard at the end of the season. And that is always a telltale sign of whether a manager really has his players motivated. Because when you're out of it and you're still playing hard at the end, that speaks volumes. You see a lot of clubs that when they're out of it on September 5th, 6th, 7th, they just check out. And all they're doing is waiting for the finish line and looking toward the finish line. That is not what's happened with Chip. Has not allowed that to happen. And to their credit, the players have responded. Because a lot of times a manager can implore players to do it, but if they don't respond, then it doesn't matter anything a manager says. So Bochy, whose opinion I value highly,
sure,
credits a lot of the turnaround to what Chip Hale has been able to do in pushing that club. And he thinks that they are not that far away, but he's not going to speak to what they need or what they don't need. But, in speaking to other people privately, they do... And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Brad. They need a pitcher in that rotation who's a veteran who can lead that staff. That's the one thing they need.
And who's the guy that's out there this year in free agency that you think would even consider that? You know,
I think there's guys out there. There's definitely names that you think, okay, there's somebody that might be able to be interested in that. I don't have the full list in front of me right now, but I know guys like, I'm not saying Colby Lewis, but that caliber of guy.
Sure.
Somebody who has been in the postseason, somebody who is not in their 20s, somebody who has can say, look at my resume. Guys, this is how you do it. That level of guy. And I'm not saying that Colby is that guy because he's in his mid-30s. I don't know that that would be the most attractive guy for the D-backs. But depending on the contract length, that might be the type of guy.
No, I get
they
you.
They need somebody. I'm sorry?
I get you on that.
Yeah.
Safe travels. I appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
Yeah. So the postseason starts.
Well, have fun with it. You're going to be all over the place, I'm sure.
I will, but I'll be available.
All right. See you later.
All right, Brad.
There's Pedro Gomez. Safe travels there from the airport in San Francisco. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network Senior Fantasy Analyst. Your guys' fantasy teams blow, okay? And here you are. It's waiver wire time, and there's a lot of new names. I want to talk to Michael about your questions. People send them on in to me, brad@sports360az.com, brad@sports360az.com. Michael Fabiano's next. Now it's time to bring on board Michael Fabiano, the Hall of Famer, NFL Network, and NFL.com, everything fantasy football. And right off the top, scoring over the weekend was simply stunning. Is this the new NFL? I mean, it's got to be great for fantasy, Michael.
Well, as long as you didn't have C.J. Anderson or Jeremy Hill, there were still certainly a whole bunch of stinkers out there. But there were a lot of points. A lot of quarterbacks are putting up great numbers, which, again, backs my theory of wait on a quarterback when you have your draft. You're also seeing some tight ends sort of emerge into more consistent, valuable options. And we thought tight end was going to be very weak this year. So, Yeah, it was good to see it. I still think there's some confusion at running back, though, and some of the big names are not producing. I mentioned Jeremy Hill, Justin Forsett, Marshawn Lynch. We haven't seen these guys put up the numbers, C.J. Anderson, that we were hoping for. So there are certainly some positions who have seen their stock rise in terms of scoring, and others, not so much.
I'm seeing a lot of questions about running backs. Lamar Miller or Chris Johnson?
Chris Johnson. Yeah, I can't believe I'm saying that. He wears 23 for the Cardinals. He looked 23 last week. Great, great performance against the Niners. Bruce Arians clearly loves to stick with his veterans, and I think he sees 18-plus touches this week against the Rams, who can't stop the run. Very good against the pass so far this year, but their run defense has not been good.
What do you make out of Lamar Miller?
Well, he's another one of those running backs who has been a major disappointment. He's dealing with a little bit of an ankle. And to be quite honest, Brad, the whole Dolphins offense, Jordan Cameron's done next to nothing. Jarvis Landry in standard leagues isn't even in the top 20. PPR, he's much better. Rishard Matthews has been the best player on that team from a fantasy standpoint the last 2 weeks. And who started Rishard Matthews? Now people are picking him up. But the Dolphins as a whole have not been good, and I'm a little worried about the addition of Jonas Gray, and he played a little bit last week. I worry that this could be a committee, but Lamar Miller is not a guy who's playing like he's in a contract year, that is for sure.
Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, NFL.com, the Hall of Famer. Okay, so the injuries to Roethlisberger and Marshawn Lynch, I'm getting tons of questions about those. Where are you at on Michael Vick?
I'm actually in a dynasty league, and I'm playing him on Thursday night. Great matchup. Baltimore has not been good at all against quarterbacks this year. Is he the same guy who was the highest-scoring fantasy player a few years ago with the Philadelphia Eagles? Of course not. But he's got great weapons around him. I mean, his deep ball is not what it used to be, but it's still respectable. He can still run a little bit with the football. And you can do worse. You can do worse. There are a lot of good quarterback matchups out there this week, including Derek Carr, for example, who I think is a really good play against the Bears, or Tyrod Taylor, who's been amazing and has a matchup this week against the Giants that's favorable. So there are some other options out there, but if you're really in a pinch, and a lot of people, you lose Roethlisberger, you lose Romo, Drew Brees is banged up, Jay Cutler, okay, well, you lose Jay Cutler, no big deal. But there are people out there who need quarterback help. And remember, Brad, there's two teams on a bye. Tom Brady, who's been the second-best quarterback in fantasy this year behind Aaron Rodgers, and Marcus Mariota, who is proving to be a QB1. So Vic is going to be starting in some leagues this weekend. There's no doubt about that.
What is your strategy for bye weeks? How do you go about it?
Honestly, in the draft, I pay some attention to it, not too much. But once we get into the regular season, there's almost always a guy who's kind of like, you know, that dead spot on your roster that you're not going to play this dude. You pick him, you pick up an alternative, you play in the matchups. The one player that I typically wouldn't drop that you're thinking, well, he's a kicker, is Steven Gostkowski. Now, if someone drops Gostkowski in your league, pick him up. I don't care if you have two kickers for 5 days. Big deal. You drop the other kicker. Gostkowski is so good that he is almost like starting a tight end every week. If you look at the numbers, he's always putting up great numbers. So he's someone that, even though he's a kicker, kickers are people too here, I wouldn't drop him. And if someone did drop him, I would pick him up and stash him until the Patriots come back and play. But typically you're just looking at the matchups. Honestly, I mean, that's why if you have Brady, Derek Carr is a good option. Michael Vick is a good option. Taylor's a good option. If you're playing a running back who is on a bye this week, like Deion Lewis, pick up Carlos Williams from Buffalo. He's got a good matchup, and it looks like LeSean McCoy is not going to play. So there are certainly some options out there.
We're talking with Michael Fabiano. Okay, so to this question, you answered part of it with Derek Carr. Jared wants to know, Eli Manning or Derek Carr?
Derek Carr. I don't like Manning's matchup this week in Buffalo. I know he's been good. He's not been great so far this year. Last week had a good stat line, but he hasn't thrown a pick this year yet, and I think Eli's due. Maybe for like three or four. Bad matchup. I would avoid Eli Manning.
Eric, I have the Ravens and Chargers defense. What do I do?
Both defenses are decent plays. I would prefer to go with the Chargers this week against Josh McCown and the Browns.
Picking up Antonio Andrews, getting questions about Antonio Andrews. Where are you at on Antonio Andrews?
He's worth a look, certainly. They're on a bye this week, so he's a good stash play. Mm-hmm. We don't know who the t- top running back is in Tennessee. It was Bishop Sankey first week, and we saw some Terrence West. And this past week, it was Andrews. But also keep in mind that David Cobb is on PUP, so he's eligible to come back in a couple of weeks. So maybe he's a guy you stash, unless Andrews plays in week five and is the clear guy in that backfield. But that thing's a mess right now. There are a few backfields, Brad, around the league that are just absolutely headaches for fantasy owners. Cleveland's one of them. The Giants are one of them. Now the Redskins are one of them. And certainly Tennessee is another one.
Well, don't you look, too, at Thomas Rawls or Fred Jackson and say, where are you at on that one? Because I'm getting a lot of questions on that one, too.
Thomas Rawls, he had 100 yards rushing last week, and they have a Monday night game against Detroit. So if you have Marshawn, you have to pick up Thomas Rawls. And I'm just going by what happened last week, okay? Mm-hmm. If Fred Jackson was the true handcuff, wouldn't he have played? Rawls saw all the work, and they really like him. They really like this Rawls kid. So at this point, you would have thought it was going to be Fred Jackson, but Rawls looks like the guy to pick up.
Mark, Rashad Matthews, Marvin Jones, Cecil Shorts. I need a receiver, first pick in waivers.
Rashad Matthews, Cecil Shorts, and the third was who?
Marvin Jones.
Wow. This week I would go Matthews. I don't love the matchup for either one of the guys. It's Matthews and Jones. Those are the two that I certainly – Cecil Shorts I'm not a huge fan of. So I would look to pick up Matthews for – the duration of the season. The matchup isn't great, though, this week against the Jets. Keep that in mind.
Before I let you go, who do you like? Who don't you like this week? I know you love Derek Carr a great deal. You like Michael Vick a great deal. Who else?
Well, again, those guys are going to be utilized because, a lot of people need a quarterback. I would advise people to keep playing Andrew Luck. It's weird to put him in my start him and sit him column because normally he's a no-brainer, but people are absolutely pulling their hair out about Luck. Play him against the Jaguars, trust me. Play Matt Ryan, Tyrod Taylor, and Derek Carr. Guys, I'm sitting at quarterback. I don't like Matthew Stafford, Eli Manning. Colin Kaepernick was a sit last week, and boy, he was really bad. He actually cost me in one of my leagues. I lost by 2 points. He gave
dropping.
Me less than six.
Get him
Thank
out
you,
of here.
Kaepernick. You are on the waiver wire right now. Guys that I'm starting at running back, Latavius Murray, Mark Ingram. I told you to start Joe Randall and Devonta Freeman last week. I like Carlos Williams as well. We talked about Lamar Miller as a sit. Doug Martin, Alfred Morris, Rashad Jennings, also guys that I'm keeping on the bench. At wide receiver this week, I do like Jordan Matthews quite a bit, despite the fact that he struggled last week. Amari Cooper, Brandon Marshall, play T.Y. Hilton. He's got a great history against the Jaguars. And James Jones, one of the best pickups in fantasy. And wide receivers I'm benching this week. Right now, I don't like Alshon Jeffrey. We'll see how he does throughout the week. If he's able to put in full practices, maybe you start him as a two or a three, but I still don't like the matchup. Jarvis Landry could be on Revis Island. Vincent Jackson, bad, bad trend against Carolina. And as much as I love John Brown, Larry Fitzgerald has reemerged as an elite fantasy receiver over the last couple of weeks. So Brown could be a rough start. Mike Wallace is also somebody I'd bench against Denver.
Stay well as always, Michael. Thanks.
All right, my man.
About to choke on a seed, so never allow me to eat a granola bar again during a show. If I die here, just come resuscitate me.
It's great. You're washing it down with some coffee. That's the recipe for disaster.
No. Well, what else do I have here? Hang on. We're open books here. Much better. So this morning, the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit, the landmark antitrust case this morning was ruled upon. The antitrust case against the NCAA was upheld by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals today. But there was a part of the legislation, and follow me on this one because this is very important. The court rejected a key piece in a decision that has momentous consequences for college sports. Three-judge panel rejected the component of the U.S. District Court Judge Claudia Wilkins' decision that would have created trust funds for student athletes. Think about that. And generated an enormous additional expense for athletic departments across the country. This morning, that was rejected. Schools would have been compelled to set aside $5,000 per year for each football and men's basketball and possibly other athletes. In exchange, you could then have used their name, their image, and their likeness with the funds accessible upon completion of eligibility. So let's take Scooby Wright. You walk in, or let's take DJ Foster, Scooby Wright, DJ Foster. You walk into the U of A team store, or you walk into the ASU team store, And there's a number 8 jersey without the name Foster on the back of it. And in Tucson, there's a number 33 jersey that's sitting there without a name on the back of it. And they're in all sorts of colors, and they're in all sorts of shapes, and there's female gear, and there's hats, and there's all this stuff that right now neither one of those players are making a dime off of. And for those that say, well, they're getting a free education, are you kidding me? That is so 1970s when you see what these kids are putting out there on the field in the way of rights fees for television networks. So this is enormous. This is a big setback, I believe, for the players' right to see some of that money. And I do believe that they are entitled to see some of that money, whether that number is $5,000, whether it's $20,000, whether it's $200. I don't know. So the schools would have gone to the schools would have been compelled to set aside $5,000 for each football men's player in exchange for the use of their name. So they would have gone to, let's say, DJ Foster or Scooby Ride and said, look, we want to sell your gear. And because of that, we are going to put aside $5,000 a year. So $20,000, when you get done from your college career, assuming you stay here 4 years, you're going to have $20,000 set aside for you. That's a very tiny number. It's a really tiny number when you think about how much exposure these kids, like Jalen Strong last year, the number of 21 jerseys that were around. $5,000, that's it, per year. And if you're a basketball player, and even if you're there for one season, if you're Stanley Johnson and you're at U of A for 1 year, we're going to give you $5,000 to give you back for all the jerseys you're selling. Are you kidding me? These jerseys are, what are they, Eric? 50, 100?
Yeah, they're anywhere from 50 to like 80 bucks.
Okay, so 50 bucks, $5,000, so 100 jerseys.
It's ridiculous.
Come on.
Yeah, I know.
Come on.
It's,
are you hearing yourselves?
It's ridiculous.
So if we sell 100 jerseys, we're going to give you $5,000. That was thrown out this morning. And the NCAA's got numerous legal challenges all around them. But I have to believe this isn't the end of the O'Bannon one. I shouldn't put in those terms. This should not be the end of players being in a position to make some money for the use of their name, their image, and their likeness. $5,000 shot down this morning. Sports360AZ.com, AZ Central Sports. We partner with the Arizona Republic. TV show tonight, 5:30, 10, and 1 a.m. on Fox Sports Arizona. Brad Sussmatz, Football AZ. Plenty of content up on our website at sports360AZ.com. That's sports360AZ.com.